Fuck you! Australia! Germany! Africa!
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here it is, Monday again. Funny how that happens after Sundays. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room and join in the rollicking, madcap, merry, multimedia, real-time conversation that takes place between the hours of 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time every day, where you will be met and greeted by Hoghead, Jeremy in Vermont, Labor Man, Steve from Georgistan, and a whole host of others who are arriving themselves, even now as we speak. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy, loud and clear via TuneIn in the wilds of far Vermont. Thank you very much indeed. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, definitely Bob Kincaid. And this is, well, the beginning. It's kind of neat the way it worked out this week. I noticed that the last 5 days of September will be the last five, that will be Monday through Friday. So we will end the month with Friday on the front porch. And hopefully we will end the month having beaten the Swede. And that's what we're looking to do. We've got $250 in fundraising to go this evening. One at 250, two at 125. Two at 125, four at 6250. Yeah. And further. The third switch is thrown. I'm absolutely positive that the third switch is in fact thrown. Yes, absolutely. And so, 10 at 25, 25 at 10, etc. That's where we are for fundraising this evening. Thank you very kindly. Thomas is loud and clear on FYINation.com. That's good to know. Of course, this being debate night, I'm getting preempted at FYINation.com because. So if you're listening on FYINation.com, I will disappear at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Yeah, it's not like I'm just going to walk away. I'm just getting preempted. I'll still be doing a program over here and at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and on White Rose and on TuneIn, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, until 9. At which point, what with Agnes being away from home, still looking after our eldest in the aftermath of her surgery, I won't have her here to shoot me in the neck with a Thorazine dart. I'll have to use one of Heather Mansion Bresh's self-administering Thorazine pens, at which point I will stab myself in the neck with it, and the little talking what's-its will tell me what to do, and I'll press the button, and it'll, and I'll be all set to watch the presidential pageant tonight, which I guess we have to talk about. And I guess we'll have to talk about it tomorrow, too. Maybe Wednesday, possibly Thursday, You know, because we couldn't possibly talk about anything but that. Right? Because, I mean, everybody else is going to be talking about it. And naturally, being a progressive broadcast operation, we have to talk about what everybody else is talking about. Right? Right. I don't know. Maybe somewhere along the way, we will figure out a way to talk about something interesting. Oh, okay. A labor man in the chat room telling me, Bob, no need. Don't bother. Scrump the Jagoff won the debate. And that's kind of true. The first word hasn't been uttered. But, you see, there's been a lowering of the bar in presidential debates and vice presidential debates that goes back, I would say, to 1960, Nixon, before I was even born. Yeah. Because Nixon showed up on television, the brand new amazing TV, electric TV box, and he was all sweaty and nasty looking, and he looked terrible on television. Whereas John F. Kennedy looked dashing, dapper, young, handsome, and inspiring. Nixon looked like he just got busted in a, you know, I don't know, some sort of, I don't know, just got busted burglarizing an opium den or something. And from that time forward, the presidential debates on television have been deemed to be, and you can almost hear the scare quotes around this, very, very important. Yeah. And so, from that point forward, the bar has been lowered. The bar went way, way down in, what was it, 1988? With the Dan Quayle-Lloyd Benson debate, in which Dan Quayle merely had to manage to walk out on stage without the pointy part of his necktie sticking out of the fly of his pants, at which point he was deemed to have turned in a magnificent, magnificent debate performance. Then by 1992, you had Ross Perot walking around talking about giant sucking sounds. And then the nadir of presidential debates, the 2000 debates, when, oh my God, Al Gore yawned. No, it wasn't a yawn. It was a sigh, damn it. It was a sigh. And the for-profit media said, oh my God, how dare he? He sighed at that poor little moron that the Republicans are running, George W. Bush. And we know how 2000 worked out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we knew all too well. But the bar went way down for George W. Bush because, well, affirmative action for white folks is okay. And now, here we are, 16 years later, and the bar for Republican presidential debates is so low you would have to use ground-penetrating radar to find it. And that's where we find ourselves. And Donald Trump has already won. All he has to do is show up. He can say anything he wants to. Unlike Dan Quayle, because the bar has been sunken somewhere down near the mantle of the earth, if not to its nickel iron core. Unlike Dan Quayle, Donald Trump can come out with his necktie, the pointy part of his necktie, sticking out of his fly. If for that matter, Donald Trump can walk out on stage with, to the extent that anybody can actually see it, his actual tiny penis sticking, well, sort of half-heartedly out of the fly of his trousers. And the for-profit media won't say shit about it. Donald Trump can call Hillary Clinton anything he wants to, and the moderator of tonight's debate, Lester Holt, registered Republican from Illinois, won't say shit about it. I mean, Donald Trump can come out on stage with his dick in a box. And the for-profit media will give him style points for the wrapping paper. Hillary Clinton, meanwhile, will be subjected to a barrage of questions about those goddamned emails and about that goddamn Benghazi and. You know, maybe she can be asked a question about her choice of underwear or what kind of cosmetics she uses or whether she's foregone cosmetics and gone straight to the mortician's wax. Who knows? Hell, maybe morticians don't even use wax anymore. But if you think I'm getting this wrong, tell me. Oh, that's tough. Marty says, I'd rather watch the programming on TLC than the pageant tonight. I fear, drunk or sober, watching will be bad for my liver, kidneys, heart, and not just because of how my Giants have been playing. But there is that, right? So I don't know, you know, and I'll probably, because I'm as susceptible to this horseshit madness as the next person. You know, maybe I'll take to the Twitters or something. Yeah, maybe I'll channel my inner snark. But I can't tell you I'm excited about this, and I can't tell you that I have any hope for this. I saw a statistic cited, I think, by the vaunted New York Times. Which was, in fact, a place that one could once be proud of working. Saying that there are a third of presidential voters tonight, a third of American voters tonight, who will base their decision on this pageant. And I want to know who they are and whether they'll be wearing helmets tonight and knee pads and elbow pads and bite guards. Steve in New York says, how long before we hear this? He looked presidential. Oh, God. Or, you know, before Mrs. Greenspan says something shitty. Maybe she can, you know, talk about Hillary Clinton's fashion choices. And here, let me go out on a limb and just be a complete asshole about this. And please, please, Mrs. Clinton, please don't wear the banana suit tonight. Please don't wear the banana suit tonight. Don't wear anything the same color as an Amazonian poison dart frog either, please. You know, she could walk out wearing a very smartly tailored Brooks Brothers business suit, complete with tie and Egyptian cotton cloth shirt and cufflinks and stuff, and the right wing could, you know, accuse her of being a trans person. But it's all out there. Earlier today, Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, got a screen cap from an NBC News site, wherein one of the leading questions about tonight's debate was, "Why does Hillary Clinton always wear pants?" Meanwhile, Carol tells me that she just saw a TV ad for Chia Hillary and Chia Cheeto. The fucking apocalypse is here. This is not a drill. Oh, dear God. Well, at least the Chia on top of Benito Cheeto's head will be real. Ron and Raleigh, subject line, well... Ron says, we could talk about the new shows in the new TV season. I've watched a few. I binge-watched something yesterday. I'm waiting for Agnes to get home before we watch, over on PBS, before we watch the BBC adaptation of Charles Dickens's Bleak House. I cheated and watched the first episode, just to make sure it was going to be worth our time. It's one thing to waste my own time. It's another thing entirely to waste Agnes's. Looks promising. But then I just saw something, and the title alone said, click me. It was apparently a CBS series that was promptly sent to video, called Brain Dead. Here's the premise. I like to think of it as a modern adaptation of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Man, when I was a little kid and saw the original version, the black and white, and with the pod people under the bed. Yeah, I was never one to think that there were monsters under my bed, but I made double damn sure about the pods. Oh, dear God. Jeremy has issued a correction. Jeremy in Vermont says, oh, no, Bob. The trans conspiracy is all tied up in Michelle Obama and Barry being secretly gay men. Just ask the flat earthers. Oh, God. But I saw a... The premise of Brain Dead is that bugs from outer space land via a meteor. The meteor lands in Russia. The Smithsonian gets hold of it, has it transported here to Murka, where the bugs get out and begin eating into the brains of people in D.C., How could one resist? Now, the premise behind this is that when one has had 40% of one's brain eaten away by a bug, that one becomes more driven, more healthy, stops drinking, exercises more, and becomes more politically polarized. And it made for interesting watching. I saved the final episode for tonight, in case I needed something to break the real time, real world horror of the pageant. Why did I go ahead and watch Braindead? One person and one person only. Tony Shalhoub. He doesn't know how to mail it in. I don't know if he's right wing, left wing, don't care. He's just a damned good actor. And somehow or another, he's gotten himself wrapped up in things involving nightmares from outer space. You may recall his roles in, what, Men in Black 1 and 2? Was he in 3? And I'll go ahead and give away a spoiler. He's one of the people with a bug in his brain. And he plays a hardcore right-wing senator from Maryland. Although it was hard not to see him as sort of a Mitch McConnell type. But they wrote in elements of Ted Cruz into him. So if you got nothing better to do on Amazon Prime, and this is one of the frustrating things about online viewing. The program may have not gotten enough viewership to merit a second season. And it has a serial aspect to it, so you're kind of left waiting. And that really pisses me off. If you're not going to wrap everything up by the end of season one, or you're not going to give people enough warning to let them know that you're, then don't do it. But there was some good suspense and some good comedy. And the acting's pretty respectable. And the little nods from the writers to current day politics are quite deft. There's a Fox News style attack blonde whose over the top blonde hair is just, well, not since Dolly Parton. And then there's an obvious analog to Rachel Maddow. What else? References to sit-ins and shutdowns. People listening to right-wing radio. Yeah, oddly enough, there's one scene where they can't. Where one person is who's had their brain eaten by a bug is listening to someone who's obviously a screaming maniac, you know, Flimball. But there's really no counterpart on the other person's radio, because there really isn't a counterpart in terrestrial radio much. Jim dropped a note by and says, voted today. Good. Vote early, vote often, Jim. Well, there's that. That's true, too, Randy. Randy and PA noting, no, they won't be wearing elbow pads, that one-third of Merca, but they will be packing three kinds of heat. Which begs the question, really? A third of America hasn't made up its mind? A third of America isn't really sure? Oy. Yeah. Meanwhile, I had a brief conversation with Dr. Bill prior to his program earlier today. And I ran over to 538. I know, like, Todd in Maryland hates that I go to 538. But I do. Todd apparently thinks that Nate Silver is not much of a prognosticator. I don't necessarily agree. According to the Nowcast at 538.com earlier today, the Nowcast had Donald Trump winning the election. It has now evened a little bit, and the Nowcast has Hillary Clinton at 51.8% and Donald Trump at 48.2%. If the election were held at this very moment right now today. Yeah, exactly. Carol Baker noting, if Trump can restrain himself from talking about his dick, the pundits pretty much think he wins. Hey, look. He didn't fumble around down there and play with himself on national television. God damn, he's presidential. Yeah, see, Steve, in New York, you've learned. Steve says, one does not waste Her Majesty the Viking Queen's time. No, the Viking Warrior Princess. No, the VWP. No. Yes, Ron and Raleigh, have you watched The Expanse? Yes, I have, and I'm eagerly awaiting the next season. Also eagerly awaiting the next season of Outsiders. I had a standing invite to come up and watch the shooting, spend time with them. Never could get away. Never could get up to Pittsburgh. Damn. Meanwhile, John says, subject line, conflict equals ratings. If Trump is weak, pump him up. If Hillary is strong, knock her down. Close races equal ratings. And ratings, of course, are what it's all about. As the head of Viacom said some months back, regardless of whether he's good for America, Donald Trump has been very good for Viacom and CBS. Marty objects. Marty says, hey, I'm one of that one-third. Granted, my choice is between Hillary Rodham Clinton and leaving the ballot blank, but... Yeah, but that's the point. Marty, the New York Times said that there are one-third of the American electorate who haven't decided whether they wish to vote or whether they will vote for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. It's not that one-third of the American electorate hasn't quite decided between Gary Johnson and Jill Stein. And I don't know. I just don't know. Hey, that's a hoghead in the chat room. I got to catch up with. I got to start on Mr. Robot. I keep hearing about Mr. Robot, and I haven't even tried, but apparently a lot of buzz behind that. And I know one of the principals in that, I first saw him in the HBO drama The Pacific, and he was brilliant. Played a young Marine they called Snafu from New Orleans. Okay, so we got all that going for us. And anything else that you want to bring to the table? Oh, shoot. I was about to plumb screw up. Did you know that? I was. In fact, one may argue that I have already plumb screwed up. But you know what today is? The 26th of September, 2016? It's Monday. Well, what does that mean? Yeah.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know. Morons.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up just a few short steps off the carnival midway over here to this thin cybernetic veil of canvas. It's Moran Monday, and the Moran Monday tent is open for your examination, your perusal, your delectation. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. Aunts and uncles, brothers and sisters, kiddies and cousins, come on up, come on up. You can't tell the morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the morans. You just can't tell them much. Yes, indeed, for less than 17 cents per hour of programming per $10 per month subscriber, you will be privy to them all. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, healthers, birchers, baggers, booger eaters, Republicans, libertarians, one and all, waiting, right here behind the aforementioned thinly veiled of cybernetic canvas, just waiting for you. A gentle reminder, gentle visitor, please, as you enter the Moran Monday tent, keep all your personal effects close within reach. Keep a hand on purses, watches, wallets, European-style messenger bags, small children, pets, that iguana you won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls, because the morans, being Republicans, right-wingers, etc., can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. And I'm not kidding. Now, you thought that just because we were going to have a freaking presidential pageant tonight that we didn't have any morans? God almighty! How could you think such a thing? No, we got morans. We got lots and lots of morans. Definitely morans. Oh, where to begin? Where to begin? Let's start down on what is referred to as the plains in a little village called Auburn, Alabama. It was a big football weekend across the Southeastern Conference this past weekend. The Georgia Bulldogs got exposed by the Ole Miss Rebels. Yes. After giving up 27 points to a University of Missouri offense that only managed 11 against my beloved Mountaineers this week, well, they got the dogs got thumped, which pretty much leaves Tennessee in the driver's seat for the SEC East, but you don't care. Meanwhile, the LSU Bayou Bengal Tigers traveled to said plains of Auburn University in southeast Alabama. They're in Lee County. To take on, well, you know, Auburn. And without scoring a single touchdown, Auburn managed to beat LSU. And it was a big deal for Auburn because they hadn't won an SEC game at home in 7-8 games, something like that. So they have a celebration at Auburn. Bear with me. I know you hate college football. You hate sports. We're liberal. We're progressive. We're above all that. We're so much better than that. But when they have a big win at Auburn, there's a little place within the little place that is Auburn called Toomer's Corner. Okay? And it used to be that there were some stately old oak trees, which the students of Auburn University would celebrate a victory by throwing rolls of toilet paper all around said trees. Yeah. This was an ancient oak tree. Sits there on West Magnolia Avenue. And the toilet papering of the trees was a tradition. Until a few years ago, when a fan of the University of Alabama, no kidding, and we talked about it here, snuck up and poisoned and killed the tree. That is something that really happened. So that guy was caught and charged and convicted. And then, at great trouble and expense, because college traditions mean something, the officials at Auburn University, which has a horticulture department, replaced the trees. Now, until the new trees were planted there at Toomer's Corner in 2015. Up until the new trees got a good lease on life, officials there at Auburn University, which is noted for a rather significant engineering program, and among other things, has the largest corps of midshipmen of the United States Naval ROTC. It's the largest single corps of midshipmen outside of Annapolis itself. Well, the engineering department and the horticulture department got together and strung up a system of wires whereby happy Auburn University students and locals and whatnot could go and fling toilet paper over the wires. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. Of course, I guess they could do something similar and just provide old couches for West Virginia University students to burn. Yet my alma mater, Harvard on the Mon, has a penchant for burning couches. No, really. You want to be upwind of those when the foam rubber starts burning. But then again, we foul the air in West Virginia with much worse, so why not? But this isn't about WVU. This is about Auburn. And about drunks and assholes. And in particular, a drunken asshole. So this year, with the brand spanking new oak trees firmly established there at Toomer's Corner, it was announced that Auburn students would again get to toilet paper a tree. Remember, this is Moran Monday. We can deal with this kind of stuff. It was announced that with the beginning of this college football season, the Auburn Tigers, war damn eagle, y'all, would be allowed to start toilet papering the oak trees again. And every spring, the toilets explode. No, different college. That's Faber. This is Auburn. And thus did the Auburn faithful begin to take great joy in throwing toilet paper at trees again. Boola boola, y'all. This they did. First TP'd the new trees. Remember about me talking about how I spent yesterday watching a program called Brain Dead? See, you got to pay attention. There are very subtle themes that roll through this program from time to time. But beginning with the football season, and with the stirring victory of the Auburn Tigers over Arkansas State on September the 10th, Auburn football fans got to throw toilet paper at the trees again. And all was right with the world. For all of 14 days. Really. 14 days. 2 weeks. Because Saturday night, after the stirring victory of the Auburn Tigers over the LSU Tigers, Tiger on Tiger violence, you see, they TP'd the new oak trees. At which point, a drunken, presumably Auburn fan, let's go to al.com for the play-by-play, Surveillance footage appears to show a man Auburn police believe to be Wiest. I believe him to be wasted. No, his name is Jochen, J-O-C-H-E-N, Wiest, an Auburn resident, who police say is not affiliated with Auburn University. Surveillance footage appears to show a man Auburn police believe to be Wiest walk up to the oak tree on West Magnolia Avenue and set fire to some of the toilet paper hanging from it. The Auburn Fire Department extinguished the fire shortly after receiving calls at approximately 12:15 a.m., according to Auburn police. Auburn University professor of horticulture, Gary Kiefer, inspected the tree Sunday morning and does not believe the fire has killed it, but the extent of the damage may not be known for several days to several weeks, if not longer.
At this time, we know that the upper canopy, the lower canopy on the northwest side, and the base of the trunk were burnt,
Kiefer told AL.com.
Based on the leaf curl and off color of the foliage in parts of the canopy, these leaves will drop over the next several days. We plan to use a lift to inspect the shoots in the canopy early this week. The full extent of the damage won't be known for several days to several weeks, and perhaps not until we see regrowth in spring. Based on the initial appearance of the tree, I don't think the fire's killed the tree. However, aesthetic death, when the tree declines to such extent that it detracts from the landscape and there is little chance of it returning to its full grandeur, may warrant consideration of removal as a result of this act. So, Mr. Wiest was found on video lighting the toilet paper in the trees. And he was arrested on Sunday while he was already in the Lee County Jail on a charge of public intox. And charged with, I'm not kidding, this is a law in Alabama. And one wonders how people like Roy Moore or the religion industry generally in Alabama will feel about this. He was charged with a criminal violation, a Class A misdemeanor in Alabama called desecration of a venerable object. Now, if you get popped for Class A misdemeanor desecration of a venerable object in Alabama, you face up to a year in jail and up to a $6,000 fine. An oak tree? Venerable? In Alabama? Yeah, wait a minute. That sounds like Druidism. Some sort of sick, perverted paganism. When in point of fact, if you go up to Tuscaloosa, I believe you'll find that the name of the hospital there is the Druid City Hospital. Hold on. Druids? Do they even know Jesus Christ as their personal Lord and Savior? Do the students of Auburn University even realize they're participating in a pagan act thousands of years old? I thought Alabama was a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Christian state. And that's true, Marty. At Faber College, the trees were filled with underwear, not TP. Well, it's Alabama. I mean, TP's cheaper than undies. And besides, they probably can't spare the drawers. Oh, God. So I just... Because I thought Moore and Monday needed something besides debate talk. And maybe you disagree. It's okay. But just something. So we got that. A Moore and Monday nomination to a subsidiary of Del Monte Foods. Named Sager Creek Foods, which produces a brand name called Allen's, and Reliance, and Monarch, and Silver Source. Well, Sager Creek Foods have issued a recall for green beans and field peas with snaps. Now, as was the case with the poo-flavored scallops of a month or so ago, these were not sold on grocer's shelves, but rather were sold for institutional sale. Food service customers. So you probably don't have any of these in your freezer or on your... No. But the states of the recall, I mean, this is a pretty broad recall, 15,000 cases of canned vegetables in Alabama, Arkansas, Colorado, Illinois, Maryland, Missouri, Mississippi, Florida, Georgia, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Virginia, Wisconsin, and West Virginia are all under the aegis of the recall. Why? Because these green beans and field peas with snaps may be contaminated with shellfish. Take a minute if you need it. It's okay. Because I kind of did. Field peas with snaps. I don't know. I prefer my field peas with buttons, but that's because I'm, you know, Amish or something. So, shellfish in the field peas with snaps. Yeah, that's true. VT Blom pointing out in the chat room, Velcro is all the rage now. But no, so the thing is, this is one of those places where you have to trust the invisible hand of the free market. You never know when you're going to get some green beans at your local okay Chinese super buffet, and it might be your Allen's field peas with snaps or field peas with toggles or cut green beans with shellfish. But there's the question. How do the shellfish get in the green beans? Now, nobody's been reported as having fallen ill as a result of the recall. And no one is at risk who doesn't have a shellfish allergy. Although one can imagine there might be people out there who do not like shellfish with their green beans or field peas. With shoestrings. If you do have an allergic reaction to shellfish, this could be very bad for you because it could include hives, watery eyes, swelling, coughing, wheezing, vomiting, diarrhea, or anaphylaxis, at which point in time you would want to deploy your $600 because Heather Mansion Bresch hasn't made enough money yet EpiPen. Now, these things came in 106-ounce metal cans. They had Best Buy dates of June 2019. And let's see, you can ask your purveyors there when you go to the restaurant. Maybe you're better off just not ordering field peas with snaps or green beans. Allen's cut green beans, Allen's Cracker Barrel label, Reliance BL cut green beans, Monarch SWD cut green beans, Monarch mixed cut green beans, Silver Source SHC green beans, Reliance MXSH cut green beans. I wonder if those come with mud flaps or something. I mean, it's an MX after all. Allen's Field Peas with snaps. Customers should return the products to the place of purchase for a refund. You know, the truck in the parking lot where the food service delivers the food. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Thanks to capitalism, even the green goddamn beans aren't safe. Note coming in from Ron in the far, not quite frozen north. Ron seems to think I'm not on Skype tonight. I am on Skype tonight, Ron. I am. But he says, you don't seem to be up on Skype this evening, so I'll send this by old-fashioned email. 5x5 in the getting chilly north, down to 40 degrees last night. The little non-coal fireplace is gently heating the lazy boy, and I'm building to a gentle plateau of passion for the debate this evening. You must feel privileged to be in a position to provide the foreplay before the evening's climactic event. Yeah, I don't know. I just kind of feel sort of dirty. Best regards, Ron from Ottawa, where the maples are already turning red. Well, I thought they were red all the time up there, y'all being communist and all. Mm-hmm. Under the subject line, institutional food recall, Clarence says, you can bet your last dollar the prisons will not honor that recall. Hell, Clarence, you think they're spending money on green beans? It's all prison cheese all the time in America's for-profit prison industry. Oh, well, there's our answer, Don in Central PA. The answer is obvious, Bob, how the shellfish got into the peas and green beans. The movement of the Titanic plates. You guys are so far out in front of me. It all makes sense. Oh, thanks, VJ. I had a note of agreement coming from VJ, saying I cannot agree more with you regarding the Red Wheatus character. That's the Tony Shalhoub character in Braindead. His acting was terrific, and even his maneuvering in the Senate was just the way it appears that real senators stall things. The show addressed everything from torture to the sit-in. I loved it. But the VJ notes, yeah, even the season finale, which you have not yet seen, does not leave us in a lurch in case they're not renewed like next season. Mr. Robot, VJ says, was just okay. But VJ adds, as long as we're talking about it, I also loved the book you recommended. Forgot the title, about the futuristic character Takeshi Kovacs. It was excellent. That would be Altered Carbon, followed by Broken Angels, followed by Woken Furies. Yeah. Marty wants to know if he can move to Ottawa. I figure if I were there, he says, I'd be watching tonight's pageant without the need for a full liter or three of rum. And hell, the rum that you would need would be Cuban, Marty. You could get the real stuff, the good stuff. Although there is some other good rum not happening in Cuba. I'm thinking of perhaps Grenada. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a start. More in Monday-wise. And if there's anything... that's right. Okay, so in regard to that food recall, the Allen's brand, Clarence reminds us, is stocked in Dollar Generals and Dollar Trees. I knew I'd seen that logo somewhere before. So it's not, they don't have the 106-ounce cans. Maybe the smaller cans are just canned with good old capitalistic, you know, E. coli. Now, some good news coming out of the ongoing controversy begun by Colin Kaepernick.
it is apparently creating a considerable consternation, conflict even, within the Duggar bunch. You remember them, the Duggars, who raised one of their children to sexually abuse some of their other children and then tried to look past it. Mm-hmm. Well, at least one of the Duggar clan actually thinks Black Lives Matter. Jessa Duggar's husband, Ben Seawald, retweeted recently an evangelical preacher named Russell Moore, who said, "Grieved to hear about Terrence Crutcher, another life lost, another community traumatized. This situation has to change." And Seawald apparently agrees, having retweeted it. Meanwhile, other weirdos in the Duggar bunch, like his mama, the Seawald's mama, she's pissed off. "Not watching NFL till they fire those who refuse to honor this country. No McDonald's neither. I will miss McDonald's." Oh, God, sure. Abs-damn-lutely. And under the general rubric of the election season, let's run over to Georgistan, because why not? You know, National Petroleum Radio, other media outlets as well, have a fascination with right-wing voters. They're trying ever so desperately to figure out why and how they're motivated. And so consequently, you're forever getting these think pieces trying to analyze and understand the dynamic of the Trump voter. Mm-hmm. NPR went and interviewed a fella in Georgistan by the name of Jimmy Arno. And Jimmy Arno was involved in a strange event last year when his family was attacked by a Muslim woman who was carrying an American flag. And with the NPR microphone in his face, Jimmy Arno recently said, "I want grandchildren, but the way this country is right now, I don't want to do that to these children. Think about what it's going to be like in 18 years if a child's born right now." Mm-hmm. If you go to a movie theater, you're liable to get shot. You go to a mall, you're liable to get shot. If you go to Atlanta or a major city, you're liable to be shot or attacked. "I know we were a whole lot further along racially 8 years ago than we are today." It was last year when Amina Ara took the flag from the Arno's mailbox and attacked Dami Arno and her 17-year-old daughter and her 14-year-old son, grabbed the family gun to ward off the attacker till the police arrived. And once again, Jimmy Arno is half right. "We were a whole lot further along, or we, now, see, you can modify this, because it's more in Monday. We thought we were a whole lot further along racially 8 years ago than we know we are today. And I wish it was something as simple as outer space bugs eating into the brains of America's right wing. But it isn't."
It's just that the racism was always there, and it's had a chance to, it's been cultivated and tenderly nursed along until it's in full bloom now. Jimmy Arno saying, if you go to a movie theater, you're liable to get shot. You go to a mall, you're liable to get... By who? Well, the ISIS. No, not really. Because mostly the people doing the shooting are white folks. The vast majority of the people doing your mall shootings and your movie house shootings are white folks. The huge majority of them, in fact. Oh, God, it's just barely 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and I'm already getting notifications. Primetime coverage and analysis leading up to the first presidential debate begins now. The thing don't start till 9. Once again, this is the extension of sports-style coverage to something as grave as American politics. This was all begun by Rune Arledge. Brother Deacon Asa, in lovely, British Columbia, says, I think we're going to need something a little more robust for tonight's pageant, Brother Bob. I've picked up a bottle of Captain Morgan's 150. This stuff will strip the chrome off your toe hitch. That it will. And not necessarily because it's strong, but because it's also nasty. It's just, I'm sorry, I just, no. Why don't they just call it is what it is? Vanilla rum? Spiced rum? All I can taste, do you taste anything besides vanilla? Because I don't. But anyway, back to the Arno family who are afraid they're going to get shot at the movie theater, you know, by a Muslim. But not by some good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gundamentalist, amosexual. No, they're figuring on getting shot by the Black Lives Matter or the ISIS. Meanwhile, back in the Arno family living room there in Georgistan, well, they used to fly a Confederate flag, too, but they took it down out of courtesy when some of their daughter's friends said it made them uncomfortable. On the other hand, inside the Arno home, they've still got a framed photograph of General Robert E. Lee hanging over their living room couch. Offering their particular and quaint down-home take on the election to National Petroleum Radio, Jimmy Arno said, Hillary wants to be elected and Donald Trump wants to be elected. They're going to talk bad about everything they can about the other candidate so that you vote for them. I discount the whole thing because I want to know what your plan is to help the country. That's what I want to know. Donald Trump, if I understand him correctly, and I hope I do, he wants to stop the flow of illegal people in this country. Stop the flow. Well, by stopping the flow, more Americans will have opportunity to go to work because they're not losing their jobs to illegal immigrants. But then, a moment of gravity. Should martial law, civil war, whatever break out in this country, they will uphold the Constitution and rebuild our laws. The war that's going to break out if Hillary Clinton's elected, if that happens, your patriots are going to overthrow the government. Hoo-wee! Patriots. See, a Trump administration, just to translate that in out of the original goober speak, a Trump administration, if we has us a civil war, it'll be because them people is a coming after us, but they'll uphold the Constitution. Hillary won't uphold no Constitution, and it's going to take patriots to save America. hanging by a thread. Now, Bishop Wheeler Gromney comes up riding on a white horse. Y'all look out now, you hear? Or next thing you know, y'all all be praying toward Kolob. Patriots. He got him some guns, just in case, you know, he has to get all patriotic. I see, there's a smart man. Marty decides I just intend to be very good to my liver and not watch. Ah, come on, Marty, you'll break down. You'll bring it in on the TuneIn app or some such. And by the way, in case we weren't paying attention, and I know you were, but maybe we can get back to talking about the debate some more here in a little bit. We had some freedom breaking out over the weekend, and it broke out pretty nasty like. In Houston and out in Washington State. In Washington State, a purveyor of freedom at more than 2,000 feet per second initial muzzle velocity started passing out freedom in a mall up there and killed some folks at the cosmetics counter. Yeah. I don't mean to say that blithely or glibly, but it's a damn fact. It took Washington law enforcement authorities, state of, not District of Columbia, a while to catch the person, but they eventually did. But not until that person had dished out a nasty dose of death and misery and murder and mayhem and anguish and agony. It was, to say the least, horrifying. He walked into Macy's at Cascade Mall in Burlington, Washington, shot four women and a man, and then, according to police, vanished into the night. They have since taken a suspect into custody. Police say that he prowled the mall with his assault rifle. Again, they did report that they finally corralled him. And then there's Houston, where a man shot and wounded nine people. A man began shooting randomly on Law Street near a shopping center on the northwest corner of Wesleyan and Bissonnette Streets in Houston. Started about 6:30 a.m. this morning. He was eventually taken into custody. Click 2 Houston has identified the shooter as 46-year-old lawyer Nathan Desai, D-E-S-A-I. He wounded nine people this morning. according to the Houston Police Department. The Houston police confirmed that he was a lawyer who was having financial troubles with his law firm. The police noted that they found several weapons in his car, as well as additional... Well, wait a minute, because here's the other part. After they shot and killed him, the Houston police noted that he was wearing a swastika-covered World War II-style German uniform. Mm-hmm. And that in addition to having several weapons in his automobile, when they got around to searching his apartment, they found lots more Nazi paraphernalia. But he's just an outlier, right? I mean, the fact that he was wearing a World War II swastika emblazoned Nazi uniform, I mean, that's prima facie evidence that the guy was crazy. Not just another gunned up American who is a big history buff. Right? So we don't have to worry about that. Dude shot 9 people whilst wearing a Nazi uniform before the police killed him. Somewhere out there, there are some disaffected white people saying, "Brown shirt lives matter." Now, Houston is a town of considerable size. One suspects they've got more than just Sheriff Andy and Deputy Barney with the bullet in his pocket patrolling that vast and sprawling metropolis. Nonetheless, at a high traffic area of the city of Houston, a man in a Nazi uniform shot and wounded 9 people before the police managed to make him stop trying to kill people, because he wasn't shooting to maim, he wasn't shooting to wing or wound, he was shooting to kill. And he managed to maim, wound, injure 9 people before the Houston Police Department decided he needed a good killing. By the way, Clarence points out that in the case of the Burlington, Washington shooter, hey, Bob, they didn't have to shoot him. He must not have been a bad dude. That looks like a bad dude. I wonder if there's any radio traffic in Houston of any Houston cops saying, "Man, he's got a World War II Nazi uniform covered in swastikas on. That's a bad dude." You think? Well, thank you, Arnold. Meanwhile, courtesy of our buddy Arnold, a little something-something. If I can get the sucker to load. There it is. Yes, of course. Courtesy of WNEP.com. Taking place in that part of Pennsylvania that's not Pittsburgh in the west or Philadelphia in the east, but rather Alabama in the middle. Arnold says, why am I not surprised? Oh, right, it's Bodunk, Pennsylvania, and the KKK is here. Photo showing Nazi flag at Bloomsburg Fair sparks controversy. And even the headline doesn't tell the whole story. On this night of the first presidential debate of 2016. A photo showing a Nazi flag hanging at a vendor stand at the Bloomsburg Fair, has sparked outrage after it was posted to Facebook. Facebook user Chloe Winters of Scranton posted the image Sunday night, and within hours it had been shared thousands of times. Chloe Winters wrote on Facebook, okay, so after a lot of thought and apprehension, I finally decided to post this. I was absolutely shocked and appalled when I saw this Nazi flag hanging at the Bloomsburg Fair yesterday. This flag represents the brutal and horrific genocide of innocent people. It stands for the hatred and destruction of a religion I feel blessed to be part of. It's 2016, and the world is still full of so much hate. When is it going to end? I'm sad to say I'll never go to the Bloomsburg Fair again, but it looks like I'm not wanted there anyway. Here's the thing. And you know, I remember, I actually got crap from one individual here in West Virginia several months back when I went to a little local, small town festival here where I live and posted some photos of things like the T-shirt that with the picture of the AR-15 on it that said, is it because I'm black? Yeah, because the rifle's black? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But here's the part that doesn't get mentioned by Chloe Winters in her original Facebook post. Or any of the follow-up by WNEP. And we have to get a little bit thinky about this. This is, of course, free market capitalism at its very best. If you go to a little small town festival in West Virginia, you can expect to see some gun shit. Because that's what people are into around here. And stuff talking about wanting to kill some Arabs, because that's what people are into around here. Or stuff talking about how, Barack Obama is, because that's what people are into around here. So these vendors that travel from fair to fair to fair, they know their market. They know who is coming to participate in the event. And the only reason dude had a Nazi flag hanging at his stand was because he knew there would be people there who wanted to purchase one. But here's the part that doesn't get mentioned. Hanging probably not 4 feet to the immediate right of the Nazi flag at the Bloomsburg Fair in PA, of equal size, is a banner that simply, on a white field with blue bordering and red letters, says, Trump, make America great again. WNEP didn't mention it. Chloe Winters didn't mention it. But when you see it, all the questions are answered. Because the vendor who knows he can make a buck selling Nazi flags knows he can also make a buck selling Trump flags. And it's the same market. It's the same segment, the same demographic. Hoghead noting in the chat room, rebel flags, otherwise known as the devil's diaper, were in plentiful supply for sale last August in Paola, Kansas. Yep. No surprise there. And yet, you have to square this with the assertion that I mentioned earlier that there are a third of potential presidential voters in this country whose decision will be made or whose decision will be significantly affected by debate performances tonight. Now, if you can, square that, I'd be thrilled to pieces to have your help. Because I can't. I mean, is that a third of American voters are going, oh no, not Hillary? No, I'll just leave it. You know what Marty was talking about? Yeah, maybe I'll just leave it blank. And if Trump is just hateful enough, you'll go, nah, I really got to bite the bullet on this one. I got to go vote for Hillary. Because I don't think there's a third of America who's like that. If there's a third of America who is basing a vote on for-profit media, on a for-profit media event, I'd say we're more screwed than we thought we were in the first place. I mean, real trouble. But there's a happy ending, as Jude points out. There's a happy ending to our Nazi flag in Pennsylvania controversy. The story, it, according to the Associated Press, they did a little background digging, and it turned out that the vendor offering the Nazi flag was a registered sex offender, and he was. According to this AP report, the fair's president, Paul Reichert, said he became aware of the issue Monday morning. Officials removed the Nazi flags for sale and initially let the vendor, Lawrence Betzinger, continue to operate. Patrons later posted photos of the booth showing that the Nazi flag had been replaced with a Confederate flag. See? They are analogous. One equals the other, and the Confederate history people can just go fuck themselves for all I care. That's a matter of heritage, not height. Fuck yourself. But then they kept looking, and they found a few more things. And as of this afternoon, officials of the fair had decided to shut down the booth entirely, because they found nasty-ass bumper stickers and stuff. Philadelphia Magazine reached out to Mr. Betzinger, and he said, well, I've sold these things for 45 years, and I don't see why it's a problem just because some people complained. If you don't want it, don't look at it. I'm not making anybody buy it. I guess there's no First Amendment at the Bloomsburg Fair. Aw, bless his little tender Nazi fifis. He's had his pee-pees hurt. Oh. And yes, in 2007, he pled guilty to child pornography charges. He said, I didn't do nothing wrong. I downloaded some items off the internet, and now I'm being punished for the rest of my life. So that's, you know, that's the Daily Double. Nazi sympathizer and child pornography aficionado. So that should give us a pretty good start to the evening. Let's see. Check a couple more emails before anything else. Flavio pointed out that with the simple message, that after he was apprehended, the Washington Mall killer, a 20-year-old, accused of murdering five people, has confessed. Arkan Settin was charged in Skagit County District Court. Said he understood the charges against him, which each carry a minimum of 20 years in prison. What? Washington State, there's a minimum for murder? It only took Arkan Settin about a minute to shoot all five victims. There was a teenage girl near some clothing racks and then four adults in the makeup department. He left his rifle with the 25-round magazine on top of the cosmetics counter and then fled in a vehicle. Oh, here's a clue. He was described by high school friends and neighbors as a troubled person who made vulgar comments toward women. He graduated last year from high school in Oak Harbor, about 30 miles from the mall. He was apprehended Saturday evening walking down a sidewalk in Oak Harbor carrying a satchel with a computer inside. Then this, according to the Washington Post, since the shooting, police appeared to have found few clues to explain the violence. I'm guessing there's some clues there somewhere, even in the body of the article. One police officer said, as far as where he got the gun, that's what we hopefully will be able to find out in the next few days. Where he got the gun? Oh, I've got that answer, officer. Murka. He got the gun in Murka. Because you can get guns all over Murka. No indications of terrorism or that he did not act alone, but the case is still open. Mayor Steve Sexton of Burlington said, it's hard for me to figure out a motive. He'd worked at the at a Navy base commissary when he was in high school. The dependent of a Navy retiree. Described by former classmates as a socially awkward teenager who later was given to inappropriately touching female students. Yeah. Of course, the right wing will go absolutely batshit crazy because he grew up in Amana, Turkey. And he had trouble connecting with American girls. One acquaintance said he doesn't know how to talk to girls. He may have committed the crime out of jealousy. Yeah. His father said, we're torn up, we're hurt. And that's all I can say. They think they say he was suffering from mental illness issues. From mental illness. But still, we can't, we you know, we wouldn't want to do a whole lot to keep mentally ill people from getting their hands on firearms. Because freedom. Yeah. So here we are. I've filibobstered half the program away, damn it. And I would be remiss if I did not note that we do call what we do here conversation radio, not filibobster radio. So it is time that we should open the phone lines. Shall we? Do let's. You know how to reach the program, I trust. 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. H-O-R-N is the stress line. The other line is 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. And from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, absolutely scot-free, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. I welcome your input. And the conversation. This is a listener-supported broadcast. We don't have any industrial advertisers or anything like that. And so, consequently, we rely on listener contributions. We've got $250 to raise this evening. It would have been far worse, but for our subscribers and some kindnesses over the weekend. But, yeah, $250 to raise. $25 at 10, 10 at 25, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it would be great not to go into tomorrow with a $450 hole. And thus far, just saying, we're at, what's that word I'm looking for? Zero. Yes, zero. So if you'd like to help out, run over to headonradionetwork.com, click on the tab called Contribute, fill out the stuff, and you will be helping to make independent radio available for anyone who wants to listen to it free of charge. We don't charge anything to anybody here. Because we're really not capitalists. And nobody here is trying to get a Gulfstream 5 or anything. It's just about keeping the program going. So all help is good help. And a reminder, yeah, we've got a little less than $100 to go on Larry's challenge. Larry was looking for 333 people at $1 apiece who would and he would then double their money through the end of this month. And we need a little less than 100 $1 contributions to make that happen. So that's on the table as well. Thank you very kindly, Larry. All right, little break, then some conversation. This is The Horn. Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. Bumper, courtesy of Ron in Raleigh.
Morris, why are you having that tree cut down?
Because it symbolizes something of great value to me. And I'm going to have to put it in my living room, do you mind?
What does it symbolize to you, Morris?
Morris, can we have your autograph?
Then please, just relax a moment and I'll show you.
Please.
Not right now!
Chicken that ain't me, but you can bet your bottom dollar, girl, that can do.
Ron and Raleigh described this as an obvious choice, but appropriate. Yeah. Long-distance dedication going out to the gang down at Toomer's Corners, near the Plains in Auburn. Morris Day, the Oak Tree, and it is Moran Monday on the horn. And the phones have been ringing. I got one I'm actually connected to. Let's run over and check in with Todd. Hey Todd, what's happening?
Hey man, how's it going?
You know, it's Monday and I'm all festooned and excited about the debate. And no, I'm not.
I know. It's so pathetic, isn't it?
I guess I'll probably watch it on C-SPAN or something. No, I don't know. Does it matter?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just kidding. Does it matter where or how you watch it? I mean,
no. Either way, you're gonna smell like you've been, you know, swimming in a septic tank. So.
Well, I'm just gonna feel real, real dirty when it's over. And of course, from the Republican side, you know, the more people that they can turn off, the more people that they can get, the more people who might otherwise vote for Hillary, they can get to say, ah, screw it, you know, the more likely they are to be successful. So to the extent that I'm participating in that strategy, I regret it and I apologize for it. You know, here's an honest and an earnest prediction, Todd. Hillary will be fairly straightforward. She'll probably have lots of policy stuff to talk about, and she'll talk earnestly about how she cares about all of America, and how offensive it is to talk about, you know,
putting Mexicans or Muslims in internment camps and everything. And that'll all be well and good after Lester Holt asks her 19 questions about her email. And then Trump will just look at her and say, bitch. And the crowd will go wild.
Oh, God.
I mean, am I way, way off the mark?
No, and that's the fucked up. That's the messed up part, is that, you know, you broke it down. This is where we are. I wasn't even going to bring this shit up, but yeah, it's fuck. I mean, and the one third comment you made, come on. This shit's giving me asthma. I don't even have asthma. This shit's fucking bringing all kinds of infirmities.
You're getting political asthma, Todd.
This is some fucked up shit. What the fuck? You can, the writing is on the goddamn wall. It's disgusting. But did you see the Eagles yesterday?
I didn't get to. That was a beatdown, wasn't it?
Man. I mean.
I didn't see that coming.
No, who the fuck saw that shit coming? Now, Smallwood, right, he's from West Virginia. He's a rookie. He was playing like he's been in the league 6 years.
Oh, he was a stud yesterday. That he may never have a game like that again.
And I had the home team. I had to watch the home team, but because everybody has been talking, I read the paper every day, and they were saying how happy everybody's happy. The coach is happy. Howie took over running things. You know, because Chip Kelly was a tyrant, apparently. Maybe not a tyrant, but you know, like controlling. So, you know, Howie took over. He was like instrumental in getting Wentz there. But Wentz, it's just to watch that guy. Oh my God. He was connected. He was like just smooth as glass. He's a rookie. The goddamn quarterback's a rookie. 6 for 6 in like 5 minutes, 6 for 6, you know, it was really something. And then it just kept going. It's like, no, they got to fuck up soon. Come on, this is the Eagles. They got to do something wrong. No.
Yeah, but the other side of the ball, what happened to the Steelers?
They felt demoralized, man. They gave up. I don't know. They're supposed to be one of the best teams in the league, period, right now, right?
No, 24-17, you know, 21-14, 14-10, 34-3, stop it. I mean, the bookies had to take it on the chin on that.
Oh,
I mean, how did they get that money right going into the kickoff?
Well, word on the street is the pawn shops were buzzing, so they had to sell a gold jewelry to make good. Oh my God! But I just had to get that out there. That was, people are feeling it now. I mean, and I love to listen to WIP. That's the sports station in Philadelphia, because they're so fucking funny. They had these regulars that call in, and they'll be really, they'll still be drunk. Like, they're still drunk now. They've been drunk now for 2 days.
I mean Antonio Brown got 140 yards receiving yesterday, and still 34-3.
Right. Well, that's the whole thing. They were playing like a team. And see, you know, it's really like they're in harmony. They're in zen. The coach, Peterson, he was an Eagle at one point. He was a quarterback there, I believe. Darren Sproles, he used to be with them. He came back. You know, he hit, I think one of the announcers was saying he hit, Wentz hit 7 receivers. You know, he was hitting everybody. You know, I'm getting kind of excited now, man. I'm going to have to ask somebody to buy me some gear. I don't know. I'm getting very excited. But I forgot to tell you Friday, man, what a good filibopsy you had on Friday. I was kind of preoccupied because I think I was a victim of that Yahoo email nonsense, and I lost some pictures of my friend girls. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to recover those. I don't know. Yeah, I'm a little upset about that. But, yeah, Friday and today. But and somebody told me that you're a white guy, so I want to ask you something.
Oh, wait a minute. No. You can't. No, stop. Wait. Okay. Now, go ahead.
All right. So Friday, when you brought up this woman, Miller, I forget her title, but out of Ohio.
Oh, Kathy Miller, the Mahoning County regional chair for Trump, whatever.
Right. So between her and the representative from North Carolina, his name is Pettinger. We know Kathy Miller. I know time is short, and I know other people want to call, but what? This is what I'm trying to figure out. Like I said, somebody said you were white.
Yeah, slow down, Todd. Yeah, take it easy. Plenty of time.
It's the asthma. Never had it before.
Sucks. You've got Trump's mind.
So, yeah, Trump in my trunk. So, not the bad. Listen, so, how do these people... How do they make? See, I can't even talk. How? All right.
Breathe. All right, breathe. Don't go for the EpiPen. Just breathe, Todd.
Oh look, see, I'm so glad I'm up here in the White House. I can sign y'all shoes and oh, I'm so happy when y'all come by like that. Can I freshen up your bourbon? Is that the way you want Obama to be? If he's not like that, is he divisive to America? Is that what the fuck this
no,
is?
No, because then he obviously wouldn't have any business being in the White House. unless he was part of, you know, the cast of, you know, what was it, The Butler or whatever?
Yeah.
But, no, they want him nowhere near the White House. See, this is Jeff Daniels talking to the alien in the first Independence Day movie, when he gets up close to the glass and the guy's already, like, you know, speaking through Brent Spiner's voice box or whatever, and he says, "What do you want?" And the alien just gets real close and says, "Die." That's what white wing America wants from Barack Obama. That's why they were doing all that imprecatory praying. Don't you remember that, Todd? May his days be short upon the earth and his wife and children be widows and orphans. Don't you remember that?
No, I blocked that out. That was so negative, I probably blocked that out.
So. Oh, well, it's my... Okay, so there I am bringing it up again. Damn me.
No, I really don't. I mean, I can totally see that. You know, because they did everything, but I mean, well, obviously they did it. You said, I mean, but this is my. I mean, there's so many people I hear say that. Like, he's so divisive, and all I can think about is that incident with the cop with Skip Gates at his fucking house. Because I've had incidents here where I'm like, this is my driver's license, asshole. Why are you questioning me about?
Wait just a minute, Todd. So, even though I know we're supposed to be talking about nothing but the debate tonight, I couldn't let something just blow past, and that is that there was a seminal moment this past weekend, and it happened in Washington, D.C. Oh, by the way, it was Bill Pulliam, not Jeff Daniels, in Independence Day. Thank you, Marty. Marty's our official help Bob get movie trivia right correspondent. There was a big deal this weekend because they had the official opening
mm-hmm.
of the Museum of African American History
mm-hmm.
in D.C. Mm-hmm. This is part
That's
of the
my Smithsonian. My childhood friend owns that architectural firm that did that.
No kidding.
Philip Freeline. Now they didn't really mention him that much because he's letting other people get, but that's his firm. He has one in D.C. and one in Durham. Yeah, they're childhood friends of mine.
Okay, so dig it. If you're the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, one of the ceremonial jobs you get is that you are the Chancellor of the Smithsonian.
John Roberts, right. I remember that.
So John Roberts spoke at the official opening ceremony of the Museum of the African American at the Smithsonian, the African American Museum,
mm-hmm.
and he gave a speech, and he talked about how Dred Scott was a terrible decision, And he said that Plessy versus Ferguson was a test the Supreme Court failed. But he conveniently forgot his own the test that he failed back when he declared that that racism no longer existed in the United States and therefore he could gut the Voting Rights Act. And yeah. So the goddess, you know, and the goddess of irony was apparently taking the day off. Otherwise, it would have been just, you know, and, you know, John Roberts, you know, just, you know, like a cartoon.
Well, you know, some of the callers,
finger in the light socket,
kind of. They hit on that. They you know, they didn't say exactly, like, in other words, they didn't close the loop on what you just said in terms of John Roberts should have said, well, this is a good time for me to correct what I said, you know, but people were making that connection, like, damn, this is ironic as hell. We've had, this is like the peak of all this bullshit, and here we are opening up this museum, you know. And you could almost feel the trolls saying, well, why do we need African American this and African American that? God damn it, it can't be American. You know.
You do that way too well, Todd.
Hey, man, I'm here. Let me tell you how much I like accents. I have gone to the front of the Webster's Dictionary, like the big one, the unabridged, and they tell you as far as they can tell, the history of certain accents in different parts of the country. And, you know, even in Philadelphia, there's like four or five different accents in Philadelphia. But it's interesting because, you know, if you really look at it, Cockney is a lot like a Southern accent. You know, the Cockney is like an East End London lower class accent, and it sounds like a lot like a Southern accent.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you ever get bored, you know, look in the dictionary and all that shit's in there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I just wanted to mention something about John Roberts here because it kind of begs for notice. He wrote in a case. It's got a kind of a complicated title. It's Parents Involved in Community Schools Petitioner versus Seattle School District Number 1 versus Jefferson County Board of Education et al. And it was a school desegregation case. And it was about it's about two school districts who promulgated a plan to desegregate public schools. And John Roberts wrote that desegregating a public school violated the Constitution. And here's the pull quote. Yeah, here's the pull quote for John Roberts for his tombstone someday. The way to stop okay, have you got a tennis ball or a hockey puck handy, Todd?
Because this
is going to be real bad for your asthma.
I got a field hockey ball.
Okay. This is going to be real bad. The way to stop discrimination on the basis of race is to stop discriminating on the basis of race.
What?
See, you're still talking. Obviously, you didn't use the hockey puck. I warned you.
I mean, that's what the fuck? That's bullshit.
So I got to thinking about that, and I thought, let's see. The way to stop cancer is to stop having cancer.
Exactly. Oh, you trying to upset my ass, man. Why the fuck are you doing this shit to me?
Then I got to thinking about Keith Lamont Scott. The way to have cops stop killing people for being black is to have cops stop killing people for being black.
Logic.
Let's see. The way to stop having shellfish in your snap peas is to stop having shellfish in your snap peas.
You got him, Bob.
The way to stop new old oak trees from burning down in Auburn is to stop burning down old oak trees in Auburn.
All right, I have a question.
I cannot get a bottle of liquor to you at this great distance. I don't. The transporter is down right now, Todd. I'm sorry.
I've got some really good tea, and I'm
No, but you okay? So you've got another question besides should you go with the 120 proof?
Yeah, no, what I'm saying is that you're supposed to be a Supreme Court justice because your legal mind is impeccable and your law is a lot about lies. Supposedly. I mean, make an argument, right? You're supposed to be there. When you ask somebody a question, you're already supposed to know the answer before you answer. If you want to be a good lawyer. I mean, that's what I hear. Whatever. So, that is circular bullshit.
Yeah, I know. You get bounced out on your ear out of Podunk State Law School for writing like that.
That's my point.
But see, that passes for high-minded intellectualism on the right. Arguably, had you not brought that up this evening, or opened the door that led me to bringing it up, I would have featured in a big way tomorrow on Titanic Tuesday, because that is some Titanic right-wing intellect.
No, I think you need to revisit that shit. It's worth revisiting. Just in case somebody missed, because that you can delve back into I was shocked when they said John Roberts. I was like, John Roberts, Chancellor. I remember.
Shelby County, right. Voting Rights Act, right. Yeah, that John Roberts.
See, yeah. Because I remember he had the gleam in his eye, which was a little bit different than Shelby Foote when he's talking about the South shit of mine. But, that gleam in his eye when he was reading the inauguration.
Oh, no, he gets twinkly, John Roberts does.
You've seen it.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you been to that John Harvard's brew pub? Is that still over there on 13th Street near Smithsonian?
Don't think so. No, I mean, I don't know if it's still there. I haven't been there. I didn't get to tour. I didn't get to tour that many of the fine publican establishments in D.C. Frankly, we spent a lot of time up there eating beans and rice. Believe me.
Right. I was just curious because all that stuff is free, and that was like at the end. I would hit that one. I haven't been there in a decade now, but yeah, that's. I think it's on that end over there. Maybe. I think it's over that way. But speaking of these reptilian weirdos, I'm glad you keep bringing this stuff up about the speaker, in terms of passing out that disgusting book.
Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah, Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, yes. Because the press drops the ball on that. That should be like, this is the Speaker of the House, what's his name again?
Oh, Paul Ryan.
This is the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, who relished the fact that he could pass out the book, Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand. That should be the subtext of when you say his name, that should be like part of his surname.
Oh, Paul Atlas Shrugged Ryan?
Yeah, because that says a hell of a lot. Like,
How about Paul A. N. Ryan?
Oh, cowbell. Yeah, yes, you get a cowbell for that. Right.
Well,
yeah.
but what, as I've said before, what grosses me out about that is that he's passing this out to impressionable young interns, maybe 16, 17, 18 years old, what have you. And it's got some of just the grossest, and I'm not one of those who gets all worked up. If whatever floats your boat, as long as everybody's consenting, I'm okay.
Right,
ain't none of my business. But from a literary standpoint, that is some of the nastiest sex scenes I have ever read in my life. I mean, nastiest in terms of just real. Well, I mean, the whole thing's terrible writing, like Truman Capote said, that's not writing, that's typing. The act of, William S. Burroughs in Naked Lunch wrote more tenderly about sex than that woman did.
Well, right.
And this is, of course, Naked Lunch is, of course, the book where William S. Burroughs introduces the world to Steely Dan, the giant stainless steel dildo.
And you know where that's going. See, that's breaking the ice. And then he'll be, you know, one of those interns will be in his presence, maybe with only a couple people around, maybe nobody, and he'll say, oh, did you read the book? What did you think of this part? What did you think of that part? See, that's the filling out process of the damn...
Yeah, but you know you've got to, if you hang around right wingers, the real hardcores, Todd. Here's what you do: if they've got a copy of Atlas Shrugged prominently displayed, say on the coffee table or on the bookshelf in the living room or whatever, and they go off to pick up into the kitchen to get another tray of peanut butter and crackers. You hustle over real quick, and you grab the Atlas Shrugged, and you thumb through it, and you find out if the pages with the sex scenes have been dog-eared, and then you know who you're dealing with. I think it would say a lot to get hold of Paul Ryan's tattered and torn copy of Atlas Shrugged, and then find out that the sexy time pages are all stuck together. I'm not saying, just saying.
No, it all fits. And then, he remember when he first got in, he was tweeting out these pictures of himself. You know, I go to the gym, I got my ball cap on backwards, you know. So this is my question. If he really cared about the people, you know, why doesn't he pass out a copy of The Jungle by Upton Sinclair? You know, that novel... It changed the way I think a lot about a lot of things. I know it's very old, but guess what? What's old is new.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. How about a copy of Animal Farm? Wow, you know, that Orwell was a comic.
Oh, that's one of my favorite books. Oh, yeah.
All Ryans are equal. It's just that some Ryans are more equal than other Ryans.
You know, and Fahrenheit. Why not? Why stop there? You know, so look, man, people aren't reading enough. You know, all this electronic stuff is fine, but, you know, books are books. You can't beat a good. Matter of fact, you know, I'm looking at one of my bookshelves right now, and the other day I have a 1936 copy of The Grapes of Wrath, and it's a 12th printed in 1936, and that was the first one that I read when I was a young kid, and I still have it.
Have people reading that in high schools or anything; they might get the wrong idea.
It's pretty damn sad.
Wait till you see the reading list in Trump America.
What? Wait a minute.
Sorry. Oh, made his asthma kick in again.
Okay. Stop it, Bob. All right. Just give me a start on that. What's the reading list going to be?
Well, it's going to be The Art of the Deal, and then the Holy Bible with special emphasis on 2 Corinthians, walk into a bar, and all the Ayn Rand we can stomach, and My First Lockout by Milton Friedman. The entire canonical bibliography of Ann Coulter.
Oh, that person.
Yeah, caught yourself, didn't you?
Yeah. I'm trying to be nice.
I know. Because we're all very nice here.
Hey, listen. Somebody gave me a password for their Netflix, and I was able to watch the whole House of Cards all the way through. Have you seen that?
I must confess, I have not.
Well, I don't know if anyone's made their opinion.
I just don't know if I've got the heart for it.
Well, it's not even about if you have the heart, Bob. I'm telling you, once you get into it, it will suck you in because, you know, Kevin Spacey is such a good actor.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean,
But I also never got fully into that that program that everybody loved about the guy who made meth. I was,
oh my God!
No, but see, I watched the first episode and I was like, God damn, this goes on for years, doesn't it?
And, no, but see, it's like this. That is like The Sopranos in that it's not even really about the crime; it's about relationships. And really,
yeah, see, The Sopranos, I was okay. Sure. Maybe I'm displaying my own biases. I don't know.
Well, I'm telling you, Breaking Bad is worth it. It's really
all right. Okay, if I ever get a vacation, I will spend some of it binge watching Breaking Bad. I will.
He ends up calling the kid he's cooking with his son. I mean, really, he identifies more with that kid than he does his own son. But back to House of Cards. The reason I brought it up is that it is so uncanny. Remember when they write these things and produce it, blah blah blah. All this stuff is months and years ahead of what's going on. But they did shadow the Clintons, and it is amazing how much it really is just like the Clintons. I mean, it is just, and the analytics in terms of how they do the polling and who's in charge in the household, and the ruthlessness, it is.
And remember, this all starts as a BBC show.
Right.
So, to a certain extent, I don't know how much lifting they did from the BBC scripts, but you got to take that into account.
Well, speaking of BBC, and I'll let you go, and I'll let me go. If anybody's a cable cutter like me, if you go on your smartphone, there's something called Steve Kraft, and you can hear the audible from MSNBC. It's under the news. If you got Shoutcast, and then go to Steve Kraft.
K-R-A-F-T?
Correct. Then, if you get online, because I don't have, my phone does not support Flash, but you get on your standalone computer or whatever device you use, like that, or tablet, whatever, you can actually watch it. You can actually watch BBC, Al Jazeera. It's all the stuff from Europe, so you can still see Al Jazeera, BBC, MSNBC, CNN. You can see all your news, and it's coming through Europe, and it goes to somewhere in Chicagoland. Whoever's running this is in Chicagoland. But you know, it's handy. You know, there's ways to watch, and I won't mention it again. So, but yeah, it's very handy. I've been using it for years, and it's really interesting. And sometimes they'll keep a hot mic on, you can hear it talking behind the set. But anyway,
You'll get a kick out of this before we go. Will in Chicago in the chat room just said, Bob, have you heard about the Canadian version of Breaking Bad? Guy gets diagnosed with cancer. Ex-student offers to have him cook meth. Guy realizes he's Canadian and has health care coverage. Guy turns the ex-student over to the cops, who don't beat him to death and rehabilitate him.
Oh.
Hey Todd, listen, man, you've got about 52 minutes to get ready for the madness.
Okay.
All right, we'll talk later.
All right, man.
See ya. Bye. And from Todd to Tracy, whose head I fear I might have made explode a few minutes ago. Are you still there, Tracy?
Barely.
Yeah, you loved the John Roberts quote, didn't you?
Yeah, you saw that. Wait, what? So, wait. Let me make the way to stop racism.
The way to stop racial discrimination. We need to memorize this. We may have to get a tattoo. The way to stop discrimination on the basis of race is to stop discriminating on the basis of race.
Okay, so the way to stop black men from being killed is to stop men from being black?
Maybe. Or let's see. The way to stop discrimination on the basis of race is to stop discriminating on the basis of race, which implies discriminate it based on something else.
Right.
So the way to stop police from shooting black men is to have police shoot men for something besides being black.
Right.
You know, like shoot them for being there.
Because they're breathing.
Yeah, right. See, that would be a nice that would be a nice race neutral way of killing black men. Not because he was black, he was breathing.
Mm-hmm.
But see, even with the Terrence Crutcher killing, you know, in Tulsa, my God, Betty Shelby, the trigger happy cop, declared that he eyeballed her.
So shades of
ain't no shades. Oh, it's straight up violation of the eyeball rule.
Yeah. I just lost him. The open casket, Jesus, in the '50s, because he
damn it, Till.
Why he was lit. Thank you. It gets to that point, Bob, where you can't remember because there's so many. I mean, there's going to be that hashtag pretty. I mean, my thing lately is it's very exhausting being black in America because you don't know what you can do. I mean, you know, you can't sit in your car and read a book. You can't, you know, walk down the street and eat with Skittles and, a drink. You can't, wait for AAA or whatever or help to come if your car breaks down. I mean, now, you can't, if, you know, cause the latest one, I mean, it has something about being done, it has something to do with being killed, but it just may, because, you know, you don't want to make white people uncomfortable, is that if you have locks, you can't have a job.
Well, a few days ago, Friday, Isaac up in Ohio kindly provided me with the official list.
Well, we have a list.
Yeah, list of things black folks can't do to avoid being shot by police. Don't run, Freddie Gray. Don't walk, Mr. Crutcher. Don't speak, Mr. Garner. Don't talk back, Sandra Bland. Don't lay down, Mr. Kinsey. Don't have a bad taillight, Mr. Scott. Don't break down, Mr. Crutcher, Mr. Jonathan Farrell. Don't call police after being robbed, Mr. Taylor. Don't reach for your wallet, Mr. Jones. Don't possess a firearm, Mr. Sterling. Don't possess a concealed carry permit, Mr. Castile. Don't lay on your stomach while handcuffed, Mr. Grant. Don't play in a park, Mr. Rice. Don't walk down the stairs of your apartment building, Mr. Gurley. Don't eat chicken wings in your backyard, Mr. Gregory Frazier. Don't have a mental health episode, Tanisha Anderson. Don't comply with an officer's request to walk out of your home, Yvette Smith. Don't be a passenger in a car. Police fired 137 rounds into the vehicle, Melissa Williams. Don't walk down the street late at night, Rakia Boyd. Don't have a diagnosed mental illness and be at home after not taking your medication, Cherise Francis. Don't be a 92-year-old grandmother minding her own business when people kick in your door, Katherine Johnston. And so Isaac notes, so what can we do not to get shot by the police? Gun down people in a movie theater, James Holmes. Gun down people in a church, Dylan Roof. Set off a bomb in New York and shoot at police, Ahmed Rahim. And kill and eat someone's face, Austin Haroof. And then Isaac says, wait, those last ones weren't us.
Mm-hmm. I'm tired, Bob. I am exhausted. I'm frustrated. And then I found all these wonderful articles about, white fragility and how... we got to start calling the nice racists to their face what they are. And there was another one about I'm losing a lot of friends because of my fight against racism, and I'm okay with it. And that's where I am at this point. I am tired of white people getting upset and hurt when I call them on their privilege. And then, you know, they started, well, you know, somebody even, this hasn't happened to me, but I saw an article about somebody white explaining about, well, the Irish were indentured servants and all that. And
they love to, I mean, it's true. It's true. But it is it's not an equivalence, and it is, and it does not erase institutional. No. I got something here since we found our way to the topic. I read an op-ed piece earlier today by a woman named Eva Kendrick, who is the state manager of the Human Rights Campaign in the state of Alabama. Now, you know the HRC advocates for LGBTQ equality, right?
Right.
So, she writes this this opinion piece about what a walking, talking, breathing embarrassment to the state of Alabama Judge Roy Moore is, and how he is finally facing a hearing, a trial, if you will, on whether he should be removed from his seat on the Supreme Court of the state of Alabama. And I'm sure you can probably guess that whether he is or isn't, this is the opening round of his campaign for governor of Alabama, which he may wind up being. So, you know, she's not screaming or cussing. This is completely respectable writing. This cannot be the spirit of our state. It cannot be the guiding principle of officials who are supposed to serve all Alabamians, not solely those who look and think like themselves. Alabama, I know, is full of love and warm-hearted people who care for their neighbor and work hard to provide a better future for the next generation. Yada, 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 yada. All of which is true, okay? Because individuals are kind and decent. Mobs are nasty.
Individual.
Mobs are nasty.
Yep.
So then, as if to prove that, I went down into the comments like I really should know better than do.
Why do you do that?
Let's see. Written by someone fighting for LGBT. She'll probably be swimming in the lake of fire one day, working against the word of God.
Uh-huh.
It goes on and on and on. But let's see. Because there's been a bunch of. I got to get down here.
While you try to figure that out.
By the way, Dogman says. Dogman says, Tracy, keep your head up. So.
Well, it's kind of hard. I'm sitting. It's 106 degrees today. So go ahead.
Yeah, I understand. But I'm trying to. God, I guess this thing. The comments on this thing just went wild. But there, down here somewhere. There we go. Here we are. I hear so many times about Alabama and the taking of federal money. How about you quit sending it? It will be okay. I mean, all the blacks will move to another state, and look how much Alabama will improve.
Yeah.
And it goes on from there. It doesn't work out well.
No, hey, happy news.
Yes.
I'm going to see Trey Crowder this weekend.
Are you really?
Yes, I am.
You will laugh your ass off as long as you can translate from the original redneck.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty good. I'm pretty damn. I mean, I didn't. You know, remember I grew up watching The Dukes of Hazzard, and I do watch Pops on occasion. So, you know, and I don't think redneck is too far from Southern black. If the truth be told, you know, so I'm okay. I am so excited. I was on his Facebook page or something, and I just accidentally clicked on tour date. And he was here. This past weekend, and he had another show this coming weekend in Pasadena. And at first, I wasn't going to be able to go because Shannon and I were going away for the weekend. But we're going away, but we're not staying until Saturday. Until Sunday, we're coming home. Early Saturday morning, and so I bought the ticket. I was like, holy cow, oh my God. The only problem is,
of course, all the shows, the 8 o'clock show was sold out. And so I'm going to the 10 o'clock show. And Jan basically said, well, honey, you know, I mean, 10 o'clock is past both of our bad bedtime. To tell you the truth, I'm usually in bed by 9. But I'm going. I'm excited.
For this, Trey Crowder, you'll stay up.
For Trey Crowder, I will stay up way past my bedtime because just the fact that he's going to be out here, you know.
That's going to be like missionary work.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Actually, no, because, well, as far as the liberal standpoint, and he's going to be out here in Pasadena, so he'll be a cultural attaché. Let's say that.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, this goes back to the early days of the program when I'd get emails from people saying, wait a minute, you talk like that and you're liberal? What?
Right. Right.
No, there's right. Lots. There's lots of us, just not many that are as funny as Trey Crowder.
Right. Well, you're pretty damn funny, Bob. You know, you sell yourself short a lot of times. When you were talking about the other day when I sent you the link about, you know, rednecks and the police, when you're trying to remember what he said and stuff, and you kind of, you know, say, well, you know, such and such. I'm like, oh, PK, you're pretty fucking funny in your own right, so shut the fuck up on that one. You know. I mean, I didn't get a chance. I was going to actually send you that message, you know, but I think I was probably driving when you were, you know, debasing it. I'm like, no. You're fucking funny, and you're... And I'm like you said, I'm one of those people that say, wait a minute, how can you be a redneck you speak like that and you're liberal? And see, I think that's the main reason for his tour. So he can let people know.
Unless I'm completely mistaken, I think Trey grew up somewhere not too awful far from the campus of the University of Tennessee over in Knoxville. And, of course, university communities will have a positive impact, and there's a lot of liberalism running around there, which is why Republicans hate them. I mean, there's even pockets of liberals at the University of Mississippi and the University of Alabama. And then God knows, Athens, Georgia. Jesus Christ, Athens, Georgia. And Chapel Hill, yeah, sure. So that has an impact. And then, of course, you know, in my case, it was the influx of people from not from around there that made where I grew up so special in the first place. So, you know, so there's reasons that these things happen, Tracy. But it's funny because I thought of you because I was out over the weekend. I think I was taking Margie to work over at Wally Hill.
Oh, God.
And we were waiting at the traffic light to turn into the Wally Hill parking lot. And coming across, turning left in front of me was, I kid you not, Rep. General. And, of course, we'd been talking about that clip from Trey Crowder talking about, you know, rednecks running from the police in a sweet-ass car.
Right.
The General Lee. And I went, damn, goddess of irony watching over me. I got to tell Tracy about this.
And that's probably right when I was buying my tickets to see Trey Crowder.
Probably was when you get right down to it.
If you get right. I mean, because, like I said, Jen and I, we do our yearly pilgrimage. The first weekend in October is Gay Day at Disneyland. And so it's so, you know, talk about just those things. It's like, really, what? Before Jen and I got together, this is something I did every year. They have what they call Mickey's Halloween Haunt. They close down the park, and it's a special ticketed event. You have the whole run of the park, and it's one of the few places, the only place out here for the amusement park that have a Halloween theme, you know, day or what have you, that you can actually wear a costume. It's the cutest thing that adults and kids alike. And not only that, they have trick-or-treat stations. And so I've been doing this for the last, Jen, I've been doing it for 4 years. So I've been doing this for the last 7 years. So one year I went, and I'm looking at all these people in red shirts, and I'm like, what the heck? And then that's when I found out about Gay Days. This is before Jen and I got together, just before I realized who my authentic self was, before I realized that I was a lesbian. I'm like, I was just tickled pink. And then, so then, you know, it became a yearly thing for Jen and I. And typically we go there, we spend the night, and then the next morning we get up and go to the tables and Rincon. I mean, okay, so, but this weekend, she's still recovering from, you know, the suspension.
Hey, Tracy.
You know, baby.
Okay, I was going to say, you weren't holding your tongue just right, because your audio.
Oh, but did I lose you?
Yeah,
did I lose you?
No, you didn't lose me. It's just all breaking up and garbled. I think your Bluetooth has got a toothache or something.
Hold on, let me try this, because I've stopped. I'm not driving. Is that better?
Oh, dramatically.
Okay, that is.
Yeah, Bluetooth is like that.
Bluetooth and stress line, not so much. And I got the new iPhone, and I normally plug it in, but now the new iPhone, you cannot plug your phone and your, because I usually plug in the things for, you know, to talk through the radio. But now you can't charge and talk at the same time as using the earphone jack. So it's like, yeah. So anyhow, what was the last thing I heard? What was the last thing you heard me say?
Well, I think I got to going to breakfast.
Okay, so yeah, so no, so usually Jen and I go drive down to Rincon the next morning and spend the Saturday in Rincon. But two things, Jen's still recovering from her hip surgery, plus we're about to have some major work done in the front, you know, homeowner stuff, major work done in the front yard. So we're like, well, forget Rincon. So when I said, so that's when I said, oh God, I'm going to see Trey Crowder. So that's how we wound up doing that. But like you said, I need a good laugh. I spent.
Oh, you're good. I'm guessing you will be hurting coming out of that show.
Yes.
Hey, I got to ask you, I got a note for you though, coming in from Andy, up in Redwood City.
Okay.
Andy says, ask Tracy what she thinks about Uber being the official transportation for the Democratic convention in Philadelphia. Nothing else more clearly spells out how the Democratic Party feels about working people, especially taxi cab drivers trying to earn a fair wage and an honest living. Uber's a neoliberal parasite feeding off the morons that decide to sell their souls to the devil by driving for Mr. Travis Kalanick, like the scabs breaking the picket lines. Mr. Kalanick and the politicians that support him need some swift kicks to their backsides. I figured Uber out when I realized, or when the West the tea bag and raw milk legalizing West Virginia teabagger legislature went to great pains to legalize Uber in West Virginia, and then I said, the gig economy is here. I don't know about you, but I've never taken Goober, and I've never taken Uber, and I never will.
Well, and this is the thing, and because I have a bunch of friends that are driving for Uber or Lyft, and they're apologizing. I said, no. Don't apologize to me because you're trying to make a living. I have no issues with anybody that drives for Uber because they're just trying to work. I have an issue with the way it's done, and like you said, how it's, you know, it's, I used to make, if I really work, I don't work as much as I used to because I'm married, so I don't work as much. Granted, but before Uber, it was not uncommon for a cab driver to make anywhere between $50,000 and $100,000 a year, depending on where you're working. I'm not in New York, L.A., San Francisco, large city. You know, but now on average, I mean, when I say most drivers have lost pretty much 50% of their income, I am not exaggerating. When you have to work longer and harder just to make less money. And then I'm thinking about now, it's so funny that you brought up Uber, because I cannot tell you how many times I've been almost run off the freeway or hit in accidents from Uber drivers, you know. And
because they're not pros, they're amateurs.
Right. And on top of the fact that they have to look at their phone, you know, some of them are driving for Lyft and Uber. They got two phone apps open. You know, they're running around. They don't know where they're going. And it's like, it's a recipe for disaster. And I would love a study. I would love for somebody to do a study. Maybe it'll be me, but, you know, that's stuff I don't like to do. But I would love to see the study on how much vehicle accidents have risen and the cost of these accidents ever since Uber got in, you know, became...
Well, I mean, you know about these things. What does if you decide to drive for Uber, what does it do to your insurance?
And see, that's another thing. Is that true? I have a friend.
You've got common carrier coverage, right?
Oh, honey, let me tell you. You get in my cab, I'm insured for over $1 million, if not more. I have all these different policies depending on when I'm driving, where I'm driving. I have, you know, we have sexual harassment. The insurance for our cab company is ridiculous. Especially since we drive kids, we have, you know, sexual harassment insurance. All these things that are these safeguards that are put in place to protect not only me, but to protect the passenger as well.
Well, yeah, see, I got to wondering about that the other day, because when Ferg started driving, and now Margie's going to start driving, I had to go back and rethink some basic, you know, law school stuff. And one of the things that I explained to Ferg is that even if you're just and I don't know about other places, this is West Virginia, even if you're just an ordinary driver, you know, you're driving along with one of your buddies. There's a concept in the law called guest passenger.
Yep.
And, you know, I said, you know, look, if all else fails and you're in a wreck and your passenger gets hurt, they're coming after you, which means our insurance.
Exactly. And see, and there's that, and this is what I emphasize when people are asking me about Uber and the insurance. And granted, it's been a while, because for a brief second, I thought about driving for Uber, but not giving up my cab, but like driving for Uber, especially like when during summer, when summer school is out, when school is out and during the holidays, you know. But here's the thing. I came to my senses, and mostly because of the insurance situation, because from what I, you know, when I, because you know me, I'm going to do my due diligence. I'm going to do my research. So when I was first researching driving for Uber, I checked, because I have Allstate insurance, okay?
Ah, Allstate.
Allstate, yes. And because I have very good insurance because of my driving record. And now that I have a higher credit rating, my insurance has gone down because of that as well, okay, which is fucking ridiculous. But that's a whole nother conversation about, you know, how the banks and the insurance companies are in bed with each other. But anyhow, you know, what does my credit worthiness have to do with the way I drive? Fuck you. But anywho, so what's happening was, if you're driving for Uber and you get into an accident, your insurance company could cancel you right on the fucking spot, because you're using your vehicle as a commercial vehicle. There's no longer a private passenger.
Well, that's using your vehicle for commercial purposes.
Exactly. And so, you know, that's a whole other McGilla. And
I got nothing for Uber, and the fact that the Democrats got in bed with them is embarrassing, but not surprising.
It's embarrassing.
But not surprising. Because they'll take money from anybody.
You know,
the Republicans will take money from anybody. Apparently the cutoff line, and it's not a hard and fast rule on the Republican side, is taking money from Nazis and Klansmen. But that's even a sort of, that's a door that's squeaked open a little bit in the Republicans.
Yeah, ask about David Duke.
But, you know, remember when Remember when the Democratic National Convention was in worker unfriendly Charlotte, North Carolina? I wonder if the Democratic Party would actually have the nerve to be as bold, and this is kind of silly, I feel real stupid saying this, to be as bold as the NCAA was. And the NCAA is just gross. But at least they stood up to the bigots in North Carolina. I wonder if the convention had been in Charlotte this year, I wonder if the Democrats would have had the nerve to say, nope, we're moving it. Because I'm guessing the answer is no.
No, because why?
Because swing state.
It's just, they're fucking pussy. Democrats, let's face it, have been toothless pussies for a long time. Just the fact that, right, the classic example of the fact that fucking Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee for president of the United States, but everybody who has any fucking sense knows that if Bernie Sanders had gotten the nomination, he would have fucking mopped the floor with Donald Trump. There is just no, there would not be a close.
I have a hard time thinking that tonight it would be a neck and neck dead heat race between Bernie and Trump. But then again, the for-profit media you have always with you, Tracy, and they probably would have made it one.
Yes, they probably would have made it one. But just, I mean, I cannot, I mean, anybody that I have spoken to that, you know, is considering voting for Trump, which turns my stomach to, you know, they, all of them say, you know what, though, if Bernie Sanders had been running, I would have voted for him. Unequivocally, without hesitation, yes, I would have voted for Bernie Sanders. But the fucking DNC has their head so far up Hillary's cooch that they just like, you know what? Fuck it. It doesn't matter. You know, we're gonna because people are gonna be so excited that, you know, we're gonna have the chance to have the first female president and this and that because it's her turn, because she's due.
But nobody ever mentions the fact that she might be the first female nominee to lose a presidential election.
Exactly.
And I'm sorry. I'm sure I'm part of the problem because I even talk about these things. And God, I guess I won't be getting invited to have beans and Kool-Aid in styrofoam cups from the liberal media and in the Hillary Clinton White House. Oh, damn.
Exactly.
I play out these different lines of thought. And one of them was on November the 9th, if we wind up with Donald Trump as president of the United States, I hope somebody, because, you know, I don't have enough influence, I hope somebody will just pen an op-ed saying, gee, Hillary, thanks for that. Please go away.
Just, I don't want to see you. I don't want to talk to you. You know how everything has been blamed on Obama. The stuff that he had nothing to do with the
if everything goes south and goes sideways and pear shaped on the morning of November the 9th, that will be thanks Hillary.
That's a because again, I have, you know, I wasn't, even when Trump was running against Mittens, not Trump, I'm sorry, when President Obama was running against Mittens, I was terrified. Especially when he was running against, you know, McCain. I wasn't even this worried when W became president. I'm terrified. I don't like living in fear. I that is not how I live. But again, I mean, I'm living.
Well, there's a difference. I mean, W had, you know, there was, it took a lot of work, and the Democrats did nothing but play defense, and they're better, it seems, and I think Andy mentioned this at some point, they're better at playing defense than they are at playing offense.
Right.
But, see, something different will happen. Everybody seems to be counting on, well, you know, even if Trump wins, I mean, you know, the Democrats are going to take the Senate, blah, 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 blah. Well, they're not going to have 60 votes. Even if they had 60 votes, a couple of those would be mugwumps. And the minute that, and under a Trump administration, dig this, because I've never heard this said by anybody else. If the new minority leader, who would be Chuck Schumer, so much as burps the word filibuster, Trump will call chinless Mitch McConnell, put his balls, what are left of them, in a vise, give him a twist, and say, you go in there and enact the nuclear option, eliminate the filibuster, and do what I goddamn well tell you to do.
Exactly. And let's not forget.
And Mitch McConnell will say, yes, sir. Okay. How high, sir? Thank you, sir. May I have another, sir?
Yes, sir. May I have another, please? And then let's not think of, lest we forget the Supreme Court. Lest we forget that if Trump becomes the president of the United States, people like me and my wife, they will find a way to put us in concentration camps. And if you think I'm joking or that I'm overreacting, you're as stupid as I think you. It's just people don't get it. I'm a triple threat. I'm black. I'm a lesbian. And I have a mental illness. I'm outspoken. I actually care about human rights. I'm a baby advocate. Whatever. I'm everything that Trump and the people who support him do not want in this country. And if there's a way to silence people like me, they will do it. And they will have the legal right to do so, because why? They will eradicate anything about human rights.
They will have at least 40% of this nation who are deplorable. And we're going to find out what that word means if Trump wins, Tracy. They will demand your head on a platter and the heads of millions more Americans, all right? Two, this is what makes Jill Stein such an unforgivable fool. Actually saying that the House run by Paul Ryan and the Senate run by Mitch McConnell are going to serve as a check on the unbalanced ambitions of Donald Trump. You gotta be 220 proof drunk off your ass with the world melting before your eyes by virtue of the brown acid while smoking some fucking crocodile to even let that out of your mouth and have anybody think you were doing anything but joking.
Right. Checks, and they can't even keep him in check, and he's campaigning. When you have people, when you have, what is it, the what newspaper in Dallas?
Dallas Morning News, yep.
When you have papers like the New York Times, all these papers.
The New York Times endorsed Hillary. And I'm sorry, that's where that line came from about, you know, one-third of Americans say that they're going to base their voting decision on the debates. I don't know how much the folks at the New York Times get out. But nobody gives a damn about their endorsement. Nobody's basing their vote on the New York Times endorsement.
No.
That was just choir preaching. You know, as distasteful as you and I may find individual aspects of Hillary Clinton's past and her failures, it's a pretty good bet I know which way you're going to vote in California and how I'm probably going to vote in West Virginia, because even voting for her here is a radical act. Who's the New York Times think they're convincing? And while the Dallas Morning News...
I think they're trying to convince themselves.
Well, and while the Dallas Morning News endorsed her, that's lovely, but do they actually think they're going to talk some sense into people that think that Barack Obama caused racism to come back in America because he's all Kenyan and stuff?
No, no. He didn't bring racism back. Racism didn't exist.
until Barack Obama became president. It didn't. No. Because old girl in Ohio, I never saw racism. This is, you know, something, you know, that is just new.
Yeah.
And that is when I'm like, these people have lost their motherfucking mind. I have just, I think at that point, when I saw that piece and I, you know, posted it on my Facebook page and all this, that is when I realized, like, these people don't care. They know Trump is a liar. They know he's a racist.
And they're okay with it.
And they're fine. It's okay because he's going to make America great again, which means I'm going to get rid of the niggas, the spicks, the coons, the dykes, the fags, the transgender, the, you know, the Catholics, the Jews, the Muslims, anybody and everybody that doesn't look like fucking Beaver Cleaver and his mother June.
And I guess you saw the sign outside Fayetteville, West Virginia, a photograph of which I posted on Facebook this weekend. I've been meaning to take a picture for a while, but I was coming back from taking Margie to work on Saturday.
I didn't see it.
And I had to pull off the road, and I felt a little dot. I took the picture, and I boogied, okay? Because you don't know. And you don't want a shot ringing out or anything. So it's not exactly fine photography, but it reads, "Does your candidate agree with the Bible? Are they godly?
Oh, yes,
do they look to God and his word, the Holy Bible, for direction?" And that's the world I live in, Tracy. And that is the world south of the Mason-Dixie line. That is America behind the corn pone curtain. And I don't think a lot of these vaunted political analysts and pundits and professional hand-wringers and pearl clutchers even come close to understanding the dynamic that's at work down here.
They don't. Because, like Tom Hartman said, you know, when he said, "I can't afford a Trump presidency," and then he backed it up. He said, "Actually, I can. I'm a wealthy white man. I could pull up stakes and disappear for 4 years if I need to and not have to worry about being affected in any shape, form, or fashion by the poison and noxious person that he is." Like that thing, the STD, stop the Donald. Don't let him infect our country. But the problem is Donald Trump is not the cause of this. Is a virus that has been festering for how many years has this country been in existence? Racism, bigotry, and all this has been a part of it. It is in the fucking DNA of this country, for God's sake. And Donald Trump has given people permission to be who and what they really are. It is now okay for you to be openly racist. Because nobody's calling anybody on this shit. Just the fact that, you know, that article that I was reading about, you know, about being, you know, I'm losing friends because I'm fighting racism, resonated so much with me because I was always that person. I've always been, I used to call myself the fly in the buttermilk. Fuck that shit. I'm the Hershey kiss in the cream motherfucker. So I know what it's like to be surrounded by a bunch of well-intentioned white people who I thought were my friends and really are not. Because I give you a pass when you say stupid racist shit. And as I say something to you and you like, "Oh, wait, I did not realize I was being racist." Because let's face it, race, like I said, that DNA thing, people don't even realize that they're being racist.
Yeah. No. It's way too far below the surface to even. I mean, I check myself just to make sure, because it's possible.
Look,
I'm sure I'm
checked myself.
I'm sure I'm capable. But here, let me throw a couple of things at you, just since we're nearing the all important moment that we've all been waiting for. You know, debate time. I want to give a little bit of credit to Joy Behar, of all people.
Joy Behar, for real?
Yeah, she kind of nailed it on the debate this evening. Let's check in.
But the question that I think really for the debate tonight, what do the candidates each need not to do? Mm-hmm. You know, we know what they need to do. What do they not need to do tonight?
Well, you know, the bar is set so low for Trump that if he doesn't belch in her face, that'll be a win. I mean, really, no one expects him to have any brains at all tonight. So anything mm-hmm. that he does that looks presidential is going to give him. You know, I was just reading that Palin and Biden actually tied in a debate.
So we've got that. If he doesn't belch in her face. Meanwhile, and I'm still trying to figure out why anybody's interested in anything this clown has to say, Hugh Hewitt, showed up over on MSNBC, and you get this.
And Hugh, you know from personal experience how hard it is to pin these folks down, especially Donald Trump. We've got the new NBC News Wall Street Journal poll out saying that there's a third of voters that are going to use tonight's debate to help make their decision in November. So given that, is he capable of answering questions of substance honestly and truthfully?
Oh, sure, Thomas. I spent 10 hours total across the stage from Donald Trump in four separate debates. He is a very accomplished performer, as one would expect from someone who spent 10 years on a reality television show under the lights and able to direct. I think the pressure is actually on Secretary Clinton. She has so many things she can't do. She cannot cough. She cannot laugh with the distinctive Hillary laugh. She cannot shout like editor supporters last week, and she cannot condescend. On the other hand, Donald Trump just has to be affable. I saw a lot of that. I also saw a lot of cutting remarks, and I have noticed a very great ability that when he doesn't have any idea what the right answer is, to answer the question at length without giving that away so obviously is to embarrass himself. And so I do believe that while the expectations game favors Donald Trump, he brings a lot of strength to this of experience and performance in debates and reality television past.
Because, you know, Tracy, that's where we are. Experience in reality television wins debates. And hey, you know, the other thing that's great for him, he's got a history of knowing how to throw a folding chair at Vince McMahon in fucking TV wrestling, okay?
Mm.
Meanwhile, and Hewitt's a jerk, but he's right. And he's not right because he's reading the American people. He's right because he's reading the for-profit media. She can't cough. She can't wipe her nose. She can't need to take a potty break. She can't be late coming back from that potty break. She can't raise her voice. She can't laugh. She can't, if she fucking smiles. Okay? So, in a,
she can't do anything.
She can't do anything.
And
God forbid, if he calls her Crooked Hillary and her voice goes up one goddamn tenth of a decibel, she'll be shrill.
And this is the America we're living in. This is what, I mean, I'm working tonight. Well, I have Will, but I'm here. I'm in Lakeland until at least 9 o'clock. So for all intents and purposes, I can watch a debate. Because I'll be stationary, but I don't think I was. My nerves could take it. The other day, I did something. I did an experiment and just to see how long I could tolerate something. So I recorded the original Imitation of Life, and so I, you know, because of my awareness, because of you know when I watch movies, I watch them differently. You know, through what it was really like for Black people in these movies. And anybody that knows Imitation of Life is, you know, about the Black mother who had the light-skinned daughter who could pass for white and wanted to be anything but Black. So I couldn't even almost get past the credits, Bob, because I'm watching the credits. You know, back in the day, the old movies, you did the credits before the end of the movie. So you had, you know, the cast and the characters, yeah. Right? So
I've got, you know, I know, I've got...
So this is
I don't watch horror. I don't watch horror movies. I don't watch, you know, I don't watch Don't Go, Little White Girl Don't Go Into the Basement movies.
Well, that's my favorite movie. I'm sorry.
But I mean, I don't watch them because it stresses me out. You know, suspense,
but what killed
terror,
me
is, horror. But I don't do horror, you know, horror, blood and guts, slash 'em up movies because they stress me out. And I'm sitting here at 5 minutes till 9 o'clock, Tracy, and I'm nervous, and I'm uncomfortable.
Let me just say why what happened with me is those that awareness about what happened with how what this country is really based on. So I'm looking at the cast of characters, and it says Claudette Colbert and her character's name, first name and last name. You get to Louise Beaver and anybody name anybody black in the movie, it was just their first name, Bob. They didn't even give them a last name. Now the woman, both women are widows, a widow. So Mrs. Claudette Colbert is Mrs. whatever her name was. But the black woman is just Delilah. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Back
before just being a first name was a thing.
Right. She's just Delilah because she it's not even enough that she has enough about her that the screenwriters got enough of her character to even give her a fucking last name. And at that point, I'm like, and I'm done.
Yeah.
She can either get a last name.
I don't know about you, but I'm going to do this to myself, but I think I'm going to try to get as comfortable as I can. I'm not going to sit back here in the studio and watch it. I wish I had some sort of chemical something or another to get me over the hump. But I'm going to deal with this stone cold, painfully sober, and then probably have nightmares. I don't know. But I got to get out of here, Tracy, because we're right up against it.
Yes, you do. Run up against it. So take care. Try not to scream. Keep the hockey puck handy. And thank you for taking one for the team.
All right. You take care, Tracy. It's always a joy. Bye now.
You too. Bye.
And it is. It's time to get out of here. And, you know, some nights we have nights like this. So I guess tomorrow we will start the program with a $450 fundraising goal, unless something good happens overnight. And by the way, just a reminder, the 26th, the end of the last week of the month is the part of the month where we have the fewest subscribers. So if you'd like to jump in and become a subscriber to help keep the horn going, it's a big part of us meeting our monthly fundraising goal. And it is much appreciated. Just click that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation and we'll be off and running. But we didn't raise a single penny this evening, and I'm sorry. I don't know if I did something to keep that from happening or what, but or maybe everybody's just out getting loaded waiting for the debate. Thanks, Sparky. Yes, I needed some philosophy there. Settle down, Bob. Just be the ball, Bob. Be the ball. Well, it's kind of hard to be the ball with you typing all the time like that. And maybe I should just watch Caddyshack instead. Yeah. The flowing robes, the grace. But I'll get out of here. Maybe, you know what? I know what I'll do. I'll listen. I'll watch the debates and listen to Malloy at the same time, and that'll make life a lot better. So, out of here. Thank y'all. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. I'll be back tomorrow night. I don't know, and we'll probably have to talk about the damn debates more, no matter what else is happening in the world. Hey, by the way, did you know that that northern Iowa and southwestern Wisconsin flooded all the over the weekend? Yeah, but of course, we have to talk about the debate. Oh, well. So, Titanic Tuesday tomorrow, shall we? Here, 6 p.m.? Good. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.